Good morning, everyone. We're going to start this meeting. If I can ask everybody to please lower your voices. Also, if you can turn off your cell phones, put them on vibrate, that would be very helpful for efficiency of the meeting. I'm going to call this meeting to order. If we can do roll call, please.
Aguirre. Here. Arambula. Arapostathis. Donovan. Here. Fletcher. Frank.
Here.
Galvez.
Here.
Gomez.
Here.
Hall.
Here.
McClellan. Here. Montgomery.
Here.
Moreno.
Here.
Rios.
Here.
Salas.
Here.
Ward.
Here.
Thank you. If I could get a motion for approval of the January 17, 2019 minutes. Thank you.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Moreno, second by Mayor Salas. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Moves unanimously. Before we move into public comment, I'm going to ask for a motion to add an additional item to our closed session, which is, I believe it's noted on your agenda, highlighted, 24D, which is we're going to have a hold on for a second. Let me just read this.
And Chair Gomez, I can introduce this.
Okay, that would be great. Thank you.
So under the Brown Act, the board can add an item to its agenda after it's been posted if there's a need for an immediate action and that need arose after the agenda was posted. And so this is a pending litigation case of MTS versus Grand Central West. And after we posted the agenda, council determined that it needed some direction from the board in this case. So we'd like permission to add it to the agenda, and we need 2/3 of the members present to approve that.
Thank you. So if I can get a motion to add, we have a motion, second by Councilmember Moreno. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Unanimously. All right, so moving on, well, public comment, we have several requests to speak to non-agenda. I'm going to give you 2 minutes in order to hear all of them this morning. So we're going to start with John Brady. Following John would be Joy Friedman.
Good morning, everyone, and happy Valentine's. It's a beautiful rainy day. The reason I'm here today is I wanted to show you some photos that we took last week of what enforcement looks like on the trolley line. What I had was pictures of Park and Market with at least 10 security officers that had descended on that stop at one time for whatever reason, I'm not sure. I wanted to bring this to your attention to reinforce our presentation last time that there were 21, you know, last year the trolley system issued 4,561 citations. There were 600 arrests. At 4 days jail time for each of those arrests, including court costs, that's roughly $1 million in costs outside of your system for these arrests. There were 21 major sweeps, 438 trespassing tickets, 89 loitering tickets, and 276 no fare tickets. And this is according to a summer board meeting that I attended last year. So of the there were $200,000 in citations that were collected at $150 each. That means there was 1,333 citations that were collected on, leaving an outstanding warrant base of citations of 3,228 unpaid tickets. These are people that could be picked up simply for not paying a fare and ending up in the jail system. I also wanted to point out what $1 million looks like. If you were to reduce the cost of security, which is currently $13 million, by less than 10%, $1 million a year would equal 14,285 full fare passes that could be utilized to help poor people recover from homelessness and get around to their jobs. If you were to apply that to discount fare passes, that would be 41,666 fare passes. My recommendation is that we consider reducing our cost of security and start providing passes to poor people who need them so that they can get to and from work and recover from homelessness. At the same time, I still want to encourage
you. One last sentence, please, John.
Oh, sorry. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Joy Friedman, following Joy would be Richard McNamee.
Good
Yes, she said, my name is Joy Freeman, and I am speaking to you simply as a concerned citizen. I have met personally many lovely, amazing, wonderful homeless people via the Voices of Our City Choir, people that I had to kind of sheepishly ask, are you homeless? Because they're so everyday, normal, as you might say, functioning people. And they had hard luck situations, you know, illness or something that happened that threw them out onto the street. They are not don't have mental conditions or drug conditions, and they may end up having those being on the street because it's very stressful. Well, in speaking with them, many say, you know, I had a job interview. I had potential job. I couldn't get there. I don't even have enough money to buy tickets, bus tickets. So I am appealing to you to say, please think about making the bus fare either free or at least the reduced fare that's not associated with being a senior or being on social services, but for anyone who registers themselves as homeless. And it will truly help reduce the homelessness on our streets, because many of them want to work, and they're capable, and they're sharp, and they could get jobs if they could get around. So that's my plea to you. Thank you.
Mr. Richard, following Mr. Richard would be Charles Fraley.
Thank you. My name's Charles Fraley. I'm an international representative for the Sheet Metal Air Rail Transportation Workers. I'm a new union on property representing the trolley employees. I'm in the process of negotiating an agreement. As most of you know, they did ratify one last year, and within 1 week, they decertified from that association, and now I'm here. Looking for your support, really. We support the trolley and everything they do. I have people in North County, and I've supported North County. I've even sponsored legislation for them so they could be in parity with the other systems as far as in their bidding process. And again, I'm just looking for support, and if anybody would like to talk to me about anything or what's going on, please reach out to me. I can leave my business cards afterwards. As far as the security, myself, I like it. I had 5 security people take down a guy who tried to stab me with scissors right down there at 12th and Imperial. If they weren't there, you know, I probably I'd be here, but I wouldn't look in this condition. So that's all. Thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Richard McNamee.
My name is Richard McNamee. I represent 3 advocacy groups, organizations. One is called CAN, C-A-N, Citizens Action Network. And the other group is a group of lawyers called Think Dignity. And the third group is the Voices of Our City Choir, the advocacy group. My recommendation is that you give young people 18 years of age and younger free rides, and also certified homeless people free rides. And in my calculation, you will not only increase your ridership, but you will also increase your revenue. And the reasoning behind that is that if young people take the, before I say that, the purpose is for young people to get to their activities easier and to earn money at jobs. As far as the homeless, it's for them to get to their lawyers and their doctors and their job applications and so forth. And the reasoning is that if they take a ride, even though they don't pay, if they take their accomplices, their friends and family, those people will pay. It's the same with the young people. If the young people take their parents or their friends and so forth, they will pay a fare. And it's the concept is, in marketing, it's called loss leader. A retail merchant will sell items below his cost to get people into his store. It's the same concept with transportation. You give free rides to these two categories of citizens, and you will not only get more revenue, but you'll get more ridership.
Thank you. Michael McConnelly, following Michael would be Rick Bramhall.
There is a big difference between providing security and criminalizing people in deep poverty, disabled, and homeless. What this security body that works for y'all does is to criminalize people who are homeless and disabled and in deep poverty. There is a growing culture in this city of doing just that. Just this week, the city council approved almost $3 million for overtime police pay to target people experiencing homelessness on our streets. Nowhere is that culture deeper than right here in this body and your security forces who do the same thing on a day-to-day basis. That is not what we need to lead forward. As I hear many of you all talk about providing opportunities for people, I see the actions of this body are totally different and of our city are different. The culture needs to change. I believe that you all can do it. I know many of you all are new. I know there is a breath of fresh air that's blowing across the city, and I hope that you nurture that and you actually use the power that you have, this great asset, this transportation asset, and you lift people out of homelessness and poverty and provide real solutions to their disabilities and their lack of housing. There are so many things that y'all can do, and I'm hopeful that you will tackle these issues. Thank you.
Following Rick will be Marshall Mimafi, I believe. Sorry, I can't make your handwriting.
Good morning, Honorable President and Board members. My name is Rick Bramhall. I'm a resident of the City of San Diego. I'm here to speak against a proposed sales tax to increase MTS services. I'm a big fan of public transportation, the MTS system, but you guys are better than this. This is a system that would hurt poor people disproportionately. You have creative minds here. I know, Georgette, Monica, you guys can come up with a better plan. There's the congestion tax that's being used in some northern European cities. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's already there. Or you can do some kind of luxury tax. Tax the upper 1%. Tax the sale of yachts or boats or something like that. But this sales tax is not fair, and it's going to make it harder to pass this. And I really do want to see you guys get more funding. So please rethink how you want to fund this. Thank you.
I'm not going to sing today. And it's really hard to be serious on Valentine's Day, but I'm going to give it a try. I want to thank San Diego State University School of Social Work and the students working on their master's degree and the assistant professor who gave me her card, who has a PhD, because they were doing a homeless research study that was done at the San Diego Central Library, and I was given, for participating in that research, two $5 day passes. So there are people that are helping. Those two day passes I'm going to give to two people when they come to choir rehearsal tomorrow, because I'm 39 and pushing, but I'm over 60. But I get an $18 pass, and I can go anywhere. So there are people that are trying to help. And those two day passes I got are going to be given to two homeless people. I would like to know, what are you doing in your district to do something similar? And I also want to thank the San Diego Central Library for everything that they do provide. They do have on the fifth floor. They have work, where you can work on your resume to find a job. I'm going to go. They have mental health services. I'm going to go. They have on the eighth floor is the music department, where I can get just about any piece of sheet music that my wonderful choir is doing. They help homeless people have a safe place to be between the hours of 9:30 and 7. Many of the programs for the homeless get kicked out at 7 o'clock and must come back at 5. I won't say any names, called Rescue Mission. They go there, and the service that is provided at the Central Library is phenomenal. And I don't know whose district that is, but you get a feather for that. They treat people with dignity, and they have so many. You can watch movies. They have so many things that you can do in the daytime at the Central Library. And I found out personally for me that I can use the computer more than 2 hours. If you go to the other libraries, they stick to the 2 hours. I can be up there doing my emails, working on my book that I'm going to be writing, writing my next song, because we have songwriting at the choir.
One last sentence.
What was that?
One last sentence.
One last sentence. I love you today, but I'm going to be fighting. So a preview, I'm going to talk about why do we have a gunman, an armed gunman on the trolley. But today's Valentine's Day, so I don't want to talk about that.
Thank you.
Lina Grossman, and then following will be David Rogers.
Hi, my name's Lena, and I'm a resident in San Diego for my whole life. I was looking into the trolley and seeing if it goes up to Sorrento Valley, because a lot of jobs in my life and other friends of mine's lives, they take you up to Sorrento Valley. There's tons of people that work there. I feel like you would get a lot more ridership if the trolley could go up to Sorrento Valley. It'd be pretty easy to get Qualcomm and the other businesses on board to take a little bus every 10, 15 minutes in the morning and in the evening, and that would really reduce all the traffic that we have in San Diego. So that's my proposal. I wanted you guys to think about possibly taking it up there instead of just to UTC, so that you can get more regular folk who are working every single day to be riding and taking the trolley. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That is all for non-agenda public comment. We're going to move on to consent agenda. We do have one public speaker. Mr. Richards, you want to speak to us on agenda number 10.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Members of the board, my name is Clive Richard, and as I like to tell people, I live in the second supervisory district of the County of San Diego and the ninth council district of the City of San Diego. I'll apologize for pulling this because it's a consent item, but I wanted to tell you how excited I am that we're moving forward with this. I remember several years ago there was some suggestions about doing something that would accomplish this goal, but I'm glad to see that it is moving forward, and I'll just, my congratulations for finally getting around to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. With that, if we have a motion to move consent agenda, or if there's a request from the board to pull any of the items. Vice Chair Rios.
Yes, item number 13.
Do you wish to pull the item?
I just have a question, and can move it forward of staff. And is there a staff that I can ask this question of? Or okay. Okay, so on the background information, there was information about the removal of abandoned track, and one of those areas was National City. And my question was there communication with the City of National City, and will they be made aware if this was approved today?
Yes, yeah, so staff has been working with the City of National City, Chula Vista, and the City of San Diego as they move those projects forward because it is track that's in the city right-of-way. We had previously worked with the City of National City to remove a segment of this track that's in Cleveland, and this action would be to just remove the rest of that. So okay. I don't know if what communication staff has had so far, but absolutely part of that process is working with the city to move that project forward.
Okay, thank you very much, and I will move.
Okay. Thank you. We have a motion to move the full consent agenda. Was there somebody else? Okay, second by Councilmember Frank. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Moves unanimously. We will now move on to the discussion items before moving into closed session. Just in terms of efficiency, we're going to move on to item 30. I will turn it over to staff.
Good morning. I'm Tim Allison, manager of real estate assets for MTS. In October, the board approved amendments to Board Policy 18, Joint Development Program. As part of that, the policies used to have procedures about how to implement the policy internally into the original policy. We changed that. The board recommended to change that, and what we're bringing to you today is the implementation procedure manual that was worked on over the past number of months. I have with me today Debbie Ruain. She's with Norwood Development Strategies. We had brought these recommendations to the executive committee in January and in February, and what you see before you today was recommended by the executive committee for approval. So I'm going to turn it over to Debbie to go through the presentation.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. I'm Debbie Ruain, very pleased to be here. I've had the privilege of working with staff and have met twice with the executive committee, and I'd like to present the recommendations to you for Policy 18. The request by MTS was to prepare a procedural manual for joint development program, essentially an outward-facing document for the public. The scope of work entailed research into numerous other transit agencies in the country, including Seattle, Denver, Chicago, LA Metro, etc. And additionally, the development community, both market rate and affordable housing developers were consulted, as was Circulate San Diego, the San Diego Housing Commission, and lenders. All were consulted for their input. We selected best practices that were applicable to the San Diego region and combined them with some that were already being done by MTS. Of great importance, it's imperative that the public be kept apprised of the available MTS sites at all times. And while an inventory list already exists and is provided to the development community, we're recommending that the list be augmented to include assessors' parcels numbers, current zoning designations, dates of last community plan updates, etc., as well as a website link to the MTS reports that may already exist for the site, such as parking studies. The intent is to make the information as accessible as possible to the development community so that they can do their research on the sites as expeditiously as possible. We also recommend prioritizing the sites so that if there are any other overlay designations that could result in additional funding or support, that those are highlighted. Since the MTS sites are scattered across the county, by prioritizing sites that already have the development community, that already have the support of the city in whose jurisdiction the site lies, this helps the developers with their process, and it also helps staff in allocating their own resources. And while MTS currently accepts unsolicited offers on their sites, this best practice is encouraged to continue. However, if an offer is received and it is not a priority designated site, it doesn't mean it shouldn't be continued. It can, with approval from the CEO. For all responses, MTS will respond within 60 days as to whether or not the offer is acceptable, if the agency needs more information from the developer, or if the offer should be rejected. If the recommendation from a development team has merit, MTS staff will bring it to the executive committee for discussion, for approval to enter into an exclusive negotiating agreement or to seek additional approvals. Aside from highlighting unsolicited offers, staff can issue a request for proposals, which would highlight areas that are critical to MTS. In all proposals, MTS will be looking for development teams that have experience with ground lease negotiations and management, as the primary intent of all sites is to lease instead of sell. Additionally, if housing is recommended by the development team, experience with affordable housing is required, because a minimum of 20% of the units will be requested to be rent and income restricted to 50 and 80% of the area median income. Regarding specific deal analysis, MTS offers, they seek offers from developers that bring other funding sources to the table. So very key to leverage other monies coming from the state, the federal government, or the county, such as tax credits. And MTS must also ensure that the development enhances transit. So any design plans that demonstrate the relationship between the proposed development and the transit facilities and encourage ridership are key. Also, it must ensure that there are opportunities for joint or shared parking and that there are opportunities to increase bicycle, motorcycle, and other forms of transportation. Must also show that there's an ongoing plan for maintenance of any new MTS site improvements and a plan for staging and construction during any construction phase that minimizes the impact to MTS and to the riders. The development teams are also asked to provide the following in their design for the sites: that the maximum allowable densities be requested, so as many families and individuals can have more opportunities to use mass transit. The 20% of the units will be affordable to families earning 50 to 80% of the area median income. That parking ratios be sufficient, which in some cases may actually mean lowering those ratios. Include alternative parking scenarios, such as off-site bike and ride sharing options. And recommend that environmental building practices be employed, and that the proposed design is consistent with the needs and wants of the local agencies in whose jurisdiction the site is located. And of course, all MTS and federal transit guidelines must be met. For the ground lease terms, a long-term lease is recommended. Lenders, particularly on affordable housing, seek a 55-year term. This will facilitate developers' request to get the financing they need to develop. Another best practice that MTS has used in the past is to defer lease payments for a short time, if requested, if it makes sense for the development, and if it's approved by the board. Also, allowing the developer to prepay the lease up front should be considered. This may make sense for some developments and their financing requirements, or offering a discounted lease over the term or the life of the lease, or even offering a loan or a grant. The early stages of construction and lease-up are critical to the developers, and this mechanism may make the difference between a deal being considered feasible or not. If these incentives are used, they need your approval, and the developer must show that the proposed development enhances the community, increases ridership, and meets your needs, as well as the city in which the site is located. All of these accommodations could be considered, but again, with your approval. Other concessions that may be considered include awarding transit passes, which will be encouraged, discounts to encourage ridership, and a financial contribution if there are funds available and budgeted and the terms are acceptable to this board. In all instances, legal requirements will be enforced to minimize the risk to MTS and ensure that the development teams adhere to all current laws and ordinances, whether they are design, transit, environmental, or land use related. And the local land use policies and procedures will be enforced. And each development team will work closely with MTS staff and its legal counsel. The task was to create a best-in-class process for joint development of your real estate holdings. This manual is intended to encourage developers to seek out a partnership with MTS to further your goals, your mission, and to minimize risk to this agency and to incentivize ridership and mass transportation. The development community is anxious to develop now more than ever, and with your participation in enhanced guidelines, it's the expectation that MTS will actively contribute to the joint development of your real estate and maximize the valuable resources you bring to partnerships with the development community. Thank you for the opportunity to work on this exciting project, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. We have three speakers on this item. We're going to start with John Seymour. Following John will be Kelvin Barrios.
Good morning. My name is John Seymour from the nonprofit National Community Renaissance, National CORE for short. We are a 501c3 nonprofit affordable housing developer, property manager, owner, operator of some of the highest apartment home communities for our low-income residents in San Diego County. I was one of the developers that was consulted on this. I reviewed it. I think it's an excellent document. I do want to point out that particularly, I think Ms. Ruane suggested flexibility on the ground leases, short, long term, in extreme cases, sale of a portion of the land. It's fairly simple, straightforward on market rate, but when you get into affordable housing with your conventional lenders, your construction lenders, low-income housing tax credits, those investors, and then the multiple sources of funding, from the federal government, God forbid, housing and community development in Sacramento, and local, the county, Innovation Trust Fund, Housing Commission, all of these sources and lenders must somehow fill up, get in line, subordinate, and make it all happen. And so these ground leases, which we've been involved in several, by the way, they are very, very difficult, but they are achievable, absolutely. But so this document is, I think it's very good. I want to congratulate you guys. You did a great job on this. I think it's going to work out. It's much better than what you had. And proof's in the pudding, so let's see what happens with it. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Kelvin Barrios. I'm here representing La Yuna Laborers Local 89. I believe most of the board members received a letter from us that was sent to the executive committee a couple weeks ago and believe forwarded to the full board a couple days ago. So we stand in support of this policy moving forward. It has been, I believe, in the works for almost like 10 months now, and it had been about like 10 years since this policy was last updated. There is an opportunity, though, and potentially maybe not necessarily since this is already kind of moving forward, it's just the implementation manual, but having a broader conversation about who builds these projects, how are they built. Private projects being built on public land may not necessarily have to adhere to prevailing wage. That might be a conversation the board may want to take up. Using a skilled and trained workforce, even talking about local hire. I think there's a broader conversation to be had here that we strongly encourage. If the board does decide to engage in these discussions, we do strongly encourage that the board not approve any joint development agreement until those policies are set in place. I do think MTS might be having a few development projects in the works right now going through its approval process. It might be good to hold off on those and, you know, get everything approved, work out that language. Right, thank you.
Ms. Maya Rosas.
Good morning. My name is Maya Rosas. I'm the policy director with Circulate San Diego. Thank you to staff, to the board, and especially to Chair Gomez for your leadership in bringing this forward so quickly over the last year. This is a really big deal. Circulate San Diego released a report a little under a year ago on how to transform empty parking lots and turn them into affordable homes. We had three main recommendations, which I'm going to go over quickly, but I want to say that there's so much more in here beyond what our three main recommendations were that we think is wonderful and really bold and will help transform MTS's properties. So our three main recommendations were: one, issue regular requests for proposals for priority sites, and the proposed language accomplishes this recommendation, including a recent addition to release RFQs at least annually. Our second recommendation was that all developments include a certain percentage of affordable on-site, and this proposal includes 20%, which is excellent. And lastly, we asked that MTS not require developments to replace underutilized parking for MTS. And clearly that intent is in this language in your proposal. However, we would like to see stronger language. Replacement parking for MTS should be no greater than the current parking utilization based on counts that MTS does conduct regularly. So we support this proposal. We think it's wonderful and want to congratulate you on your great work getting this forward. It's a win-win for MTS and I think for all San Diegans. So thank you.
Thank you. And that concludes public comment. Moving forward with council, with board members. Councilmember Moreno, sorry, I was going to city council mode. Councilmember Moreno.
Thank you. This is a very exciting policy update. As the chair of the city of San Diego's Land Use and Housing Committee, I'm always pleased to see other agencies doing what they can to solve our housing crisis. Thank you to staff and to Debbie Ruain for bringing this policy forward. And I don't think we can thank Circulate San Diego enough, and Maya and Colin Parent, for your advocacy for MTS taking a leadership role in transit-oriented development. I do think one small addition to this policy should be added. I believe that Section A3, parking, on page 8 of the draft policy should be more specific. I propose adding the following sentence. MTS will not require developers to provide more replacement parking than is justified by current demand. And I'm happy to make a motion on staff's recommendation with those just that slight addition.
Thank you, Ms. Moreno. Councilmember Ward?
Great. Thank you, Chair. And yes, thank you for bringing this forward. It is exciting as we are looking across all public agencies in the region for the opportunities they can present for land holdings to try to help to underwrite some of those costs, produce affordable housing opportunities at a better rate. And of course, aligning those with transit opportunities where it makes the most sense is just, you know, prime opportunity here for MTS. So I want to thank the leadership that really helped get this drafted and prepared for our discussions here today. A lot of that homework was done in 2018 before this current board sat. So we're really excited that this is developed and moving forward. Thank you for your expertise and leadership too, to refine this and really help get this board policy underway. A couple of quick questions. I understand that MTS, are we assessing parking utilization as part of our prioritization? I know we
do. If by assessing you mean that we're looking at studying how much of the parking is currently used?
Yes.
By transit patrons?
Yes.
Yes, we do that whenever we have a developer who's interested in developing one of our sites.
And is that a factor then for how you are prioritizing? I saw in the report here as well, we've got sort of first, second, third tiers. Is that a factor?
No, that's not really. It's more of a, we want to make sure that we're not going to make it hard for people to access transit who are currently using it by driving to the site. So I give an example. At E Street in Chula Vista, we constantly get complaints that people can't use the trolley because they can't find parking.
Right.
Old Town's another example of that. We don't own that property, but it is a location where we get people who don't take the train in because they can't find parking.
Right. And I agree with where Councilmember Reno was going with the ability for us to make sure that we're not over developing parking opportunities beyond what's currently utilized, but also we have to connect as well to what the development opportunity is that we're proposing. So if we have a really intensive new development and we want to try to be mindful of minimizing but not maybe totally alleviating, you know, necessary, and I really underscore that word, necessary on-site parking for those units. I wonder, Councilmember Marino, is your proposed policy amendment here today also going to reflect underlying jurisdictions and some of their zoning requirements?
My recommendation, and I'm happy to read it again, is MTS will not require developers to provide
more replacement parking than it is justified by current demand.
Okay, so that'll be as part of our agreements with those developers, but may be subject, would I think necessarily be subject to the underlying jurisdictions, whether it's Chula Vista, National City. Excellent. Are we considering prioritizing areas as part of these tiers within jurisdictions that may have lowered their parking requirements? So we're looking at that right now in the city of San Diego. That's coming to full council soon. Should that help maybe some of those sites become more attractive?
Yeah, our intent is to make it attractive. So in the event that a developer can make it pencil out by not having to replace the parking, or sorry, not having to supply parking to the residents in the new development, then we want to make sure that that's allowed. So yes, whether or not it's a priority site, there's a lot of factors that will come up and say, oh, we're going to prioritize this site this year over that site this year. Like, for instance, we just signed an agreement with the city of Chula Vista for a site, and it's a priority for us because it's a priority for the city. Now, that has a lot of rationale that has nothing to do with what the parking requirements will eventually be on site.
Great. I'm glad that we're kind of thinking through this. It definitely matters as well to the total development cost of a project. So trying to understand that connection between parking and also local jurisdiction requirements, I think will help us to decide whether as we move forward on this project or that project as a level of prioritization, we'll be able to develop more, I think, in a quicker time frame if that's part of our decision making.
Right. And the other thing is that we're really going to encourage innovation where maybe they can figure out a way to share the parking with the trolley patrons or with another developer that's developing adjacent or some other kind of more interesting way of accommodating their needs.
Good to hear. I had one more question and then just a quick comment as well. On the property inventory, I'm very excited for what I believe is a very critical analysis of which ones we should recommend to move forward on first. I did not see anything here on the new Blue Line extensions up to University City, and I wondered if some of those are going to be mixed.
We haven't been given the keys yet for that. That's over at Sandag.
Aha. Okay.
So we don't own the property. We can't really say what to do with it.
And we just started this discussion, of course, with the Land Use Committee, actually, with the Balboa Area Specific Plan, the MTS property that, is moving forward. It's under development. We all see the construction and the grading happening right now, and it's going to be a parking lot. We probably just missed the boat on that, but to the extent there's other property sites or we can get those back into a possible development timeline as well sooner rather than later, I think that we should be maximizing those opportunities as well along the Blue Line. Whatever we could do to unlock that with Sandag, I think, would behoove us. That it's interesting to know. There's also a vacant lot on the Riverwalk that MTS owns. I'm aware there's some early work on a master program adjacent to that. Is that a eligible property for this as
well?
Oh,
yes, and we're looking at that as a priority as well. We want to make sure that we can develop that specifically in conjunction with what's going on.
Okay, I just didn't see that listed on the joint on the inventory as well yet, but I hope that that's a prime opportunity, unless I missed it.
You see on the website right now is going to be retooled. We're going to be doing it in a mapping format where you'll be able to click on pins. The pins will show the different properties that will have whether or not we're actively working on them, whether or not they're in construction, whether or not they're sites that we are soliciting for proposals or sites that are available but we're not actually soliciting. So all of those properties are all of that website is going to be retooled. We're already doing background work on that. We've got a consultant that's doing that work for us right now. So you'll be able to see that probably in about a month and a half.
Good to hear. I just know that site in particular is one that, as it's starting to kind of get through its visioning, has the high potential to produce a really substantial number of affordable housing units there, right exactly where you want to have it, the heart of the city, at a transit stop. So thank you for those clarifications on those questions. The last comment I have, and we talk about this some time to time, is what this provides for the workforce opportunities here in San Diego and how we actually go forward as an agency in trying to better align these public opportunities, these development opportunities with larger goals that we have here as a community. I know other jurisdictions specifically have language, for example, outlining either prevailing wage, local hire projects within their jurisdiction. We're looking at some of that, of course, within the city of San Diego. I think, you know, just as a fundamental value, having hired for skilled and trained workforce, having well, good paying jobs, having local hire, this all recirculates back into the San Diego community in a way that actually is providing great benefit to our workers. And I think that this is an important thing to look into as well as we continue to update this policy. And I know we're going to be looking at it under Policy 52. I'm not proposing any specific amendments here today. I want this to move forward. But I think together as a board, we should set our expectation for the region that the building all projects in our neighborhoods are not only from our communities, but for those that also can afford to live here in our communities too. So it really can be a win-win. So I'll look forward to engaging with the board on that that level of that area of substance as we look at board policy 52. Thank you. And I'm happy to second the motion as well.
Just one comment on Riverwalk. We've been working with city staff as well as the developer for, I guess, a year at least. One of the things that you need to understand as a city council member is that land that we own is landlocked. The only way through that is through this development, okay? So we have to make sure that whatever gets approved gives us access and turns that into a developable piece of property. We're working with the developer to try to have that included in their plan on an affordable basis, but consistent with our own policy that we've been working on here. So that will be before you.
Thank you. Mr. McLellan.
Yes, we don't want to take all of the parking away that isn't being used by the trolley people, because the people that are going to be living there will need parking, as well as if our population continues to increase in San Diego as it's supposed to, we'll need more parking for those people that want to ride the trolley or the bus and need parking for them also. So we don't want to take away too much of the parking just because this is what we need today. We want to think about tomorrow when the population is, I think they said, 1 million more in the next 20 or 30 years in San Diego. And some of those people need to ride mass transit, and we'll need parking for them. Or they'll have to do as some of the people are now, they can't ride it because there isn't enough parking.
Thank you. Supervisor Fletcher.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree we need to think about tomorrow, and I believe that tomorrow needs to be a day where people have more options other than just using a car. And so as we begin to change how we approach land use to get where we have livable, walkable, bikeable things with transit that's closer, I think that we need to rethink how we thought about parking in the past. And if we have 1 million more people coming, that doesn't mean we need 1 million more parking spots in the future. And so I commend Councilmember Moreno for this change, and I'm happy to support it. I think it's the right approach and gets us going where we are. I also want to second the comments of Councilmember Ward. You know, I think it'd be good for this board in an expedited way to revisit Policy 52 and have that discussion and debate surrounding prevailing wage, which at the federal level for decades and decades has worked, at the state level has worked, and really talk about the economic return of local hire when we're investing these public dollars to make sure that those are going to local jobs that are being spent in our local communities. And in any of these projects, the ability to have a skilled and trained workforce to make sure we build it and we build it to last, I think, is of vital importance, I believe, for any entity, but I think it's an obligation for public entities. And so I look forward to that discussion and hopefully action on that. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I don't see any other council members wishing, or mayor, to speak on this item, if that's correct. All right, so I'll try to wrap it up. Super supportive of the proposed changes that Councilmember Moreno has proposed. I'm very excited to be wrapping this conversation and really hopefully putting it into action sooner rather than later. This is something that as I entered as the chair, it was one of my priorities, so I'm very happy to see it from beginning to end and the efforts that previous staffers and current staffers have given it to bring it to this fruition. Really want to thank them and acknowledge them as well. My ultimate goals were pretty simple. One is helping all our city members to achieve our climate action plans. As some of the council members and supervisors made reference about thinking about tomorrow, this is about thinking, hopefully having a tomorrow. I mean, we can argue all day long about parking spaces or not parking spaces, but if we don't have a tomorrow, it doesn't really matter. So my intention really is to be mindful of the housing crisis that we're all facing, and that's a regional housing crisis. It's not just the city of San Diego. We as an agency have land. We can provide some of that and add to the lack of housing. So that's the intention as well. And also just hopefully, if done correctly and smartly, we're bringing new customers to utilize the system that we're all beholden to, the transit system. So this is, I think, a really great policy and a really good implementation document. So thank you, Debbie, for really collecting and gathering the input and putting it in a way that hopefully as developers are wanting to partner with us, we're making it easier, but also having them be responsible stewards of making this happen. So I feel like it's really reflective of what we see moving forward. And I definitely do think that once we put it out there, developers are going to want to partner with us and do the right thing. So I'm excited and I'm looking forward in that website, hopefully in a month or less, but no pressure. And just to respond to the letter that the Laborers International Local 89 submitted, very mindful of making sure that not only are we maximizing and utilizing land, public land, responsively, but you know, definitely also addressing labor conditions will be something that we're going to be looking at. This board will be looking at, and it will be through policy 52, as mentioned. And I've already directed staff, and I think I directed already MTS staff that that's an area that we're going to, that's the next part of this whole conversation. So I'm looking forward and engaging the board and really moving forward on that. So with that, we have a motion by Councilmember Moreno and second by Councilmember Ward with the amendments, proposed amendments. And all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Moves unanimously. Thank you all. So moving on to item 31, which is the 2019 state and the federal legislative program. And I will turn it over to staff for your presentation.
Sorry, my mouse skills are not as good as they were a couple weeks ago. So this is your state and federal program. This is what we do every year at this time of year, just to kind of direct staff on what our priorities are going to be this year as we advocate on behalf of transit. What I'm going to do is give you some highlights. A lot of our program is about please don't take our funding, please don't regulate us into the ground, that kind of things. But the things I'm going to focus on are other more specific items that are in the program this year. One of the things at the federal level, there is some talk about a possible infrastructure bill similar to ARRA. This might be something that we could, we want to be ready to take advantage of, and we've already even submitted some project items to our National Association to try to stimulate that discussion. Some of the projects that we're going to look for funding for this year are bus replacement vehicles. That's a standard. We replace about 50 of them a year. Next-gen fare collection system. This has already been approved by the board as a project, and we still need a little funding for that. ZEBs, zero-emission buses. That's a priority for the board. Transferring over into electric infrastructure and electric vehicles is key. We're also looking at developing the property that's adjacent to this building, 12th and Imperial, and we need to expand the transit center as part of that project. So that would be a way to help offset the infrastructure needs of the project and therefore perhaps bring us more revenue with the development itself. And then we do need to replace one of our generations of light rail vehicles. These are the SD100s. They're almost at their end of useful life. And so that's a big ticket item in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And so we really want to start looking for funding for that, which we have started to set some aside. And then finally, we're expanding, and we need another bus maintenance facility. So that's one of those projects that you really have to cobble money together again over a long period of time. So that would be something we would be looking for. Also in the federal program, again, this was in there last year as well, we're going to look to get approval to operate cross-border freight. And this is something that we have to work with the federal government on because it has to be inspected by CBP and all the other kinds of things. We have a freight line that actually does cross into Mexico, and there is an existing crossing. So that's good, but you do need to work out the rest of the particulars, and that's something that we've been working on with our contractor who's working our leaseholder on the freight line. Also, we are helping with Sandag. They need to every year get an appropriation for the Midcoast trolley, we've helped with that. And then finally, we need to seek a legislative fix either at the state or federal level to get reimbursed for Medicaid eligible trips. This is something that we were getting up until some state legislation was passed that unintentionally took that away from us to the tune of about $4 million a year. So that's something that we're going to try to get a fix on. State priorities. So again, funding is a big part of our legislative program at the state. There's a lot of different programs now that we can try to access. Each one has its own specifics, so we don't, you know, we're going to want to cater whichever projects we submit for approval based on what the parameters of those programs are. And those are constantly changing, so every year we kind of have to stay nimble and submit what we think will be effective and successful. But we do prioritize the zero-emission bus. And then also, we want to make sure that we're supportive of the cities and developers who are applying for the Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities grants. Those are very difficult to get, but it does bring a lot of money for housing, but it has a transit component as well, and so we can get some transit infrastructure from that. We've added in here to seek subsidies for specialized fare programs if supported by the board, and that's in light of the fact that there are some proposals that board members have talked about. How can we help certain groups get more affordable or no-cost fares? But the goal would be to get subsidies from the state to offset that cost. We also would seek funding for ZEBs and some changes in policies that would help us. One is to get favorable electricity rate making, which is being discussed currently, as well as to make sure that there's a standardization of charging systems so that we're not wedded to one vehicle type and that you can really expand out the fleet. We are recommending support for ACA1, which would lower the voter threshold for infrastructure sales tax. We also are going to seek any changes that we would need to implement AB 805 authorization to go out for a sales tax measure. For instance, allowing a sales tax in less than the entire MTS jurisdiction, raising the limits on local sales tax levels, anything that could help us be more successful in the effort that the board would like us to make with that. Support housing legislation that makes TOD easier and more effective. That's very much in tune with the last agenda item. We're also going to be looking to make a tweak to our enabling statutes. There was a bill, AB 1069, that allowed or directed all of the jurisdictions to go and either work with the transit agencies or some kind of JPA to regulate taxi cabs. We regulate taxi cabs for all of our cities except for Coronado. The county has asked us to regulate for them. The sheriff currently regulates in the unincorporated area. But unfortunately, we can only regulate currently within our jurisdiction, so that's only half of the unincorporated area. So this tweak would allow us to then go into that kind of an arrangement. Again, we want to seek clarification in state law to get rid of the unintended consequence of us not getting our funding for Medi-Cal trips. And then we would always support the legislative programs of our member agencies wherever they're consistent with the board's goals. So with that, I recommend that the board approve staff recommendations for the 2019 federal and state legislative programs. And those are in attachments A and B. Thank you.
Thank you. We do have one speaker on this item, Joe Gabaldon. And you will have 3 minutes.
Good morning, Chairwoman Gomez and members of the Board of Directors. My name is Joe Gabaldon, Public Affairs Manager for SDG&E. I'd like to thank you for allowing me to speak this morning on this item and for the ongoing partnership between our both organizations. I'd like to share our company's support for this item and note a couple of key collaborations. SDG&E's mission is to build the cleanest, safest, and most reliable energy infrastructure company in America. We're proud that nearly 45% of our energy delivered comes from renewables, and that comes from steel in the ground, long-term contracted renewables. Currently, our teams are collaborating on your zero emissions bus pilot program. We have monthly meetings to ensure the charging infrastructure is installed in a timely manner. In addition, SDG&E is developing a new EV rate to support commercial fleets, including transportation systems. We look forward to an ongoing partnership on important regulatory and legislative efforts and appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Moreno.
Thank you to staff for bringing this legislative program forward. I'd like to focus on one particular area of our federal program and suggest recommend a small change. I had the opportunity to meet with Baja Rail and hear their concerns about receiving timely responses from Customs and Border Protection about the new custom inspection facility that must be built to serve the very important Desert Line. They informed me that they are unable to proceed with any other design work for their Desert Line until the exact placement, specification, and design of the new custom inspection facility is approved by CBP. I'm happy to make a motion with a proposed recommendation on the federal program to add one additional bullet that reads, work with Customs and Border Protection to seek approval for a new customs inspection facility to serve cross-border freight, cross-border rail freight.
Okay, thank you. Do you want to speak to that or?
I'll speak. Karen? I mean, it's fine adding it. We have been for the last 3 years. We're in constant communication with them. I think I talked to Karen about this yesterday, that we'll bring an agenda item back to give you a more thorough, up-to-date briefing on where we are. In reality, where we are is that, like, as you know, before you do any kind of construction project, you got to go through environmental process. And we have been focusing on having Baja Rail go through that environmental process so that we can build something there. In a very, you know, it's in a kind of a remote habitat. We just met with Baja Rail this week, and we are proceeding with at least developing a site plan level of design for what that border crossing would look like, where it would be, where the location of the technology would be, et cetera, how it would relate to Campo, where there would be manned facilities, unmanned facilities, et cetera. And then following the wrap-up, or at least getting close to the environmental conclusion, that we bring that to CBP and say, here's our plan, give us the nod so that we can design it thoroughly. So that's where we are.
Okay, that's great. We will add it.
We will add exactly verbatim. Okay, wonderful,
yes.
Thank you.
Okay, and we'll have further updates.
If you could give me the exact language, council member, that would help.
Just provide it to the clerk, and we'll make sure it gets in the record as you read it.
Great. Ms. Montgomery, Council Member Montgomery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, I'll second the motion, but I am concerned about some of this language under public safety. First, I have a question about if you could give me an example of, so the first bullet under public safety on the federal legislative program side says oppose attempts to create duplicative state rail safety and safety regulatory agencies. I just maybe an example of that so I can.
Yeah, this is a kind of a holdover. The state of California has one of the most rigorous safety rail safety programs in the country, and it always has been better than the federal program for safety in transit. And this is something that we recognize. We work closely with PUC, Public Utilities Commission, on this. And our goal would not be to try to take away from what is already currently a good process. But in other states, they don't have that kind of regulatory authority and at the state level. And so they were trying to do, at one point, a kind of cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all approach. But it doesn't really work out as well when you look at a state that's really doing it well versus one that doesn't have any kind of oversight. So that's kind of where that is.
Okay, that makes sense. Would so the second bullet point when it comes to on the federal side seeking stiffer criminal penalties for vandalism, theft, I'm just thinking, would that in any way contradict what we've done as a state with Prop 47 or anything like that? Would any of these be contrary to some of the more recent criminal justice reforms that the state has passed as a whole?
Well, I don't think so. One of our big problems with vandalism is it can have a real public safety problem because if, for instance, we get copper wire thefts all the time, and that can destroy the signaling system, which could mean that a light rail vehicle could run into another light rail vehicle because of the vandalism. And so that's really where we're looking, is to try to prevent that kind of public safety oriented, you know, catastrophic type of vandalism that hurts, you know, public safety. And
okay.
That's why it's in there.
And I mean, I know this is sort of a broader document on purpose, and I understand that. I look forward to digging into some more of those details in the Public Security Committee because I think it's very important. The last one is a bullet point that is in both the state and federal legislative program, and it's just the opposing legislation or regulations that would have an adverse impact on transit agencies' ability to provide safe transportation to all their customers. In the greatest, best world, I get that. But oftentimes, even I can use San Diego Police Department, for example. There are recent regulations that the police department says hinders their job, but at the same time, it allows us to take inventory and data of things like racial profiling and other things like that. So I want to make sure that we're not trying to put a dent in what the whole state of California said we want, which is we do not want to continue to create these systems where folks get trapped in our criminal justice system for a mistake and then are never able to get out. And it leads to other societal issues and problems. And I really think that the way that we deal with these issues are super important. So I'm not for crime, not for vandalism or anything like that. I know that this seems to be more heavily on the punitive side. And I just want to make sure that we are not sort of shooting ourselves in the foot based on that we do have a balanced approach, because I'm looking at all this right now and I'm thinking about the other side and even some of the public testimony that we've heard today. We don't even have an agency right now that really is on a civilian side that looks at the actions of our security officers that are on the trolleys. So right now, I'm just not seeing a balance. So we'll cover it in the committee, but I just want to bring the attention to it here at the board member. But thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Ms. Councilmember Montgomery, for those remarks. Definitely, I think the policies that we have around public safety will guide how we engage in this conversation, both at any level, locally, state, and federal. So I'm looking forward to the work that that committee will do as well to address the safety related to our transit, but also there were some, not today, but we've been having, just today actually, but in previous months, we have been getting some speakers speaking on public safety and how we're engaging with community. So we want to make sure that we're doing it in a humane way and really buff up some of those policies that haven't been touched for a while. So I'm looking forward to that work. So Mr. Hall, I believe you had your, no, you're good. Okay, so we have a motion by Councilmember Moreno. It's been seconded by Councilmember Montgomery. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Moves unanimously. We are going to be moving into reports, and then after reports, we'll go into closed session. We're going to move on to the first transit taxi cab pilot update.
Good morning, Chair Gomez and Board of Directors. Came this morning to give you a quick update on our one-year pilot program in which we're using taxis to supplement our paratransit service. Wanted to show you how, give you a quick overview of that program because I know some people weren't here when we made the first presentation on the pilot and started that. We'll show you how that's designed to work, and then we'll show you how we're doing so far. With me today is Jay Washburn, who's our manager of paratransit and minibus operations for us, and Vassie Lorenska, who is transportation contract specialist for us, and they are our access department. So we operate that entire system with the help of Vassie and Jay, so they do a lot of good work for us. Also with us, as I get ready to do this presentation, is Tony Palmieri from Yellow Taxi Group. Tony, are you here? Over here? And he's brought a couple of other folks with him from Yellow Taxi, so we're happy to have them with us too, because it's really been a great partnership for all of us. So as I said, it's been a one-year pilot demonstration project, and we've been running that since July of 2018. We've managed and administered that through our first transit contract, so we were able to make this a subcontract part of our overall contract for First Transit. The benefits of that are that First Transit then manages the entire operation for us as part of the access service. We set two really big goals for the pilot program. The first one was to see if we could decrease the cost per trip by moving the higher cost, lowest productivity trips from access to taxi. And then also to make sure that we maintain and even improve the overall quality of service for all of the access service, including taxis as well as the paratransit operation. So when we started the pilot, we focused on those single ride customer trips that we were making on access that were the most expensive and the least productive trips. And those would be ambulatory customers who didn't need any assistance from the driver or very minimal assistance from the driver. And we do have a lot of people on access who fit that category. So we targeted 36,000 trips for the pilot year, 3,000 trips a month to move those access trips to taxi. It's really transparent to the customer. The customer calls the access reservations line just like they always have and books their trip. And then we use some complex software to book that trip depending upon a variety of factors, everything from the specific customer data, the length of the trip, the origin, the destination, and then we actually decide sometimes in real time whether that trip continues on access or that trip goes to a taxi, and then we notify the customer in advance before the vehicle arrives there. So taxi trips are all ADA compliant. So this entire pilot and all of this service is it's done under the First Transit contract, and everything is ADA compliant. Yellow Taxi Group provides the taxi trips for us, and they've taken all of their drivers and put them through a national training program, and we have 172 or so taxi drivers now who are operating this pilot program for us. So I talked about those two goals. So the first goal was to see if we could decrease the cost per trip by moving our highest cost, lowest productive trips from access to taxi. And you can see for the first 6 months of the pilot, we've been very successful with that. We've actually been able to move a higher number of trips than what we had targeted. And that's a lot of using that software and really being as efficient and smart as we can. And then you can see that the savings per trip are actually a little bit higher than what we had budgeted, because we've been able to move some longer trips to taxi that we were taking on access. And then I put a footnote at the bottom there. The total eligible customers with a taxi trip, so over almost 1,300 different access customers have had at least one taxi trip in that 6 months. And that represents almost 50% of the eligible access customers who we could put on a taxi trip. Now, remember, we don't always move all those trips, because if those trips are fit within the productive schedules that we have, we don't want to take those off and end up driving up the cost for access. So it's a balance act on those trips. And then the second goal was to make sure that we maintain and improve our access overall productivity and service quality. And so far we've done that as well during the first 6 months. On-time performance, and that's overall both taxi and access, is up by 5%. Our trip travel time has been reduced by 17%, and that's a very positive thing for our customers. And safety has also improved, and on the taxi side, the safety record has been outstanding. So we're monitoring the pilot very closely. We take all any complaints that come in through our customer service system, go through the MTS customer service. Remember that taxi is operating this as a subcontract to First, so all the complaints come to us through our regular system. It really mirrors our existing reporting and customer service. So we've received 21 customer service compliments from our customers, and we received 92 complaints from our customers for the first 6 months. That complaint ratio is really low when you compare that to the total number of trips, but we look at every complaint through a very detailed analysis and look at every one of those for resolution, and we turn those to First Transit and to Yellow Taxi Group, and we monitor the actions that they take. And ultimately, it can be driver retraining, and it can be driver removal from the pilot program if it merits that. And you can see just a couple of trend lines here. You can see that, you know, I think it's safe to say we had a little bit of growing pains as we ramped this up over the first couple of months. These were many customers who had been riding access for a long time. It was their first time on a taxi, and of course it's also for taxi drivers their first time operating a trip for access. But you see that number decline, and we're doing very well, and now we're in a system. We've also started another process, and VASI is really heading up that process for us, and that's doing random post-trip taxi surveys. I think I got that right. So when we get the list of customers who have taken taxi trips, we've started calling those folks, and we've developed an internal survey. We ask them to rank the trip in a variety of categories, and you can see that the rankings have been very high. Overall, the access customers are very pleased with the taxi service. The trip times mirror the access service pretty well. But it obviously it's just a different level of service, and it's worked out well for the customers as well as for access. There are some concerns that we hear, and those are the same ones we hear through customer service, and those are at operator attitude. And again, if those come in on complaints, we follow up on those. And then difficulty in communications or inconsistency of driver compliance. One thing that's happened that the taxi drivers have to go through that training, because the service level is a little bit different than just a normal taxi ride. So they have to provide a little bit higher level of service for us. So our next steps, this has really been a successful pilot for us. We're looking to continue the taxi program through the remaining year. We've got one more year on the first transit contract because of the results we've seen. Our customers are saying it's a great pilot, and so we want to run that for another year to make sure that it all works the way we think that it does, manage that closely, and then incorporate that into our next contract for the access service. And then look to expand the program and continue to utilize resources and also start to look at ride sharing, the ride hailing services, the Ubers and Lyfts and those kinds of places, which paratransit systems and transit systems around the country are trying to find a way to use those services. Right now we're unable to do that because of ADA regulations, but the industry continues to try to work with some of the ride hailing companies too. And with that, if there are any questions.
Thank you, Bill. And we do not have any speakers on this item, public speakers on this item. Let me just make sure. No, don't. Councilmember Galvez.
Yes, can you tell us where this is currently, where the pilot is, and where you're looking to expand?
Well, it's incorporated within our access paratransit service, so it's just part of the normal access service that we operate. So it's within our service area, any trips within our service area, and I would say looking at a variety of those trips, they pretty much mirror our entire service area. Yeah.
What is the cost? I see the savings per trip, but what is the actual cost per trip average? Is that?
Yeah, I don't. I can get those. I don't have. Press your button.
It's approximately $24-$25 per trip, as opposed to our traditional access service, which is about $57 per trip when we do a single ride on our paratransit buses.
And do they take those from their homes to rail or another bus or?
Those trips are provided anywhere within a 3/4 mile radius of our current fixed route system, either bus or trolley by FTA regulations. And under ADA services, they can go anywhere from grocery shopping to a movie theater to a doctor's appointment. The origin and destination are irrelevant.
Yeah, so I heard you say, do we take them to trolley or bus? To be eligible for access service, you have to be determined to be unable to use the fixed route or the trolley service. Yeah.
Vice Chair Rios.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that presentation and that update on this pilot program. I think we were all interested to see what those results might look like. And my question is regarding the minimal driver assistance. What does that look like?
These, some of our clients are deemed, we have two levels of service. It's curb to curb and door to door. Door to door clients are required to be met at their door as opposed to the curb, which is different than your standard taxi service. So that's one of the adjustments with the taxi drivers and educating them on providing of the door to door service. And also visually impaired clients, realizing and understanding the need to get out of a vehicle and audibly announce you're there and who you're there for. Unfortunately, the visually impaired clients, some can't see more than a few feet, so they don't mm-hmm. recognize that the taxi is there. Those have been some of the challenges that have just been variations from standard taxi service as opposed to the heightened level of service access provides. And Yellow's been working diligently with their staff to educate them and get them to understand and recognize those differences.
And when you did your outreach to some of the riders, did you ask about that specifically for those riders who were met at the door and how they thought that was working?
The positive feedback we've gotten when the policies are followed has been very positive. Door-to-door service, visually impaired clients, we've gotten very strong positive feedback from everyone when we follow the same guidelines and Yellow's utilize the same procedures as First Transit. It's mainly the complaints have been when there's been some deviation from that policy and, as Bill said, a learning curve for the drivers and getting used to the difference in the procedures. And as the chart showed, the complaints have been declining on that, and Yellow's been doing a great job working with their staff.
And that's really great. I'm really glad to see that we are looking at those complaints and really trying to decide, you know, what we need to do to make it better. I also just have One more comment. I'm really happy to know that there is this additional training and certification that they go through, and I hope that continues even beyond the pilot program, because I think that changes continuously with the different people that are picked up for this type of service. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and I do not see any other board members in the lights. This is an information item, so no need for an action. Thank you, and thanks for the great work. Good numbers, good report. Moving on to the semi-annual uniform report and disadvantaged business enterprise.
Good morning. My name is Samantha Leslie. I'm the staff attorney here and also the DBE liaison officer. And I also have here Sam Elmer, the procurement manager. And I usually provide a consent item twice a year describing our achievement in our DBE program. But we thought a presentation might be helpful as we have several new board members to discuss our DBE program generally. So as a recipient of FTA funds, we must comply with certain DBE regulations and regarding DBE participation. And one of those requirements is we have to have a DBE program that describes how we intend to implement our DBE program and comply with DBE regulations. And you can find that at board policy number 26. We have to establish a triennial overall goal. We have to report to the FTA twice a year our achievement towards our DBE goal. And we have to conduct outreach measures to DBE and other small businesses to ensure that they're on a level playing field with the larger non-DBE firms. When we talk about DBE, it has to be a certified DBE firm in order for us to report that to the FTA. So to become a certified DBE, you must have a majority owner that's either a member of a minority or a woman. They have to have a personal net worth of less than $1.3 million. The firm must be considered a small business, and they must have average annual gross receipts less than $23.9 million. Per DBE regulations, we cannot also count a firm that's certified specifically as a woman-owned business, minority-owned business, LGBT-owned business, DVBE business, or small business. But nonetheless, we still encourage participation from these firms, we conduct outreach to these firms, and we track awards and payments to these firms as well. With the DBE regulations, we can only report our awards and payments on federally funded contracts, and we generally reserve our federal funds towards paying transit vehicle procurements, preventative maintenance, vehicle repairs, facility repairs, and paying portions of our contracted out services. And we have found in the past that we find the most success in receiving DBE participation in the preventative maintenance category. MTS has a race-neutral DBE program. That means we do not have contract-specific goals or bid advantages to DBE firms. In order to be successful, whether it be a DBE or non-DBE, they need to provide the lowest bid or best value depending on the procurement. So in order to help achieve greater DBE participation, we conduct various outreach measures, both to DBEs and to small businesses, regardless of the funding sources. And some of those outreach measures include outreach to firms, to letting them know about the benefits and eligibility requirements, about DBE and other small business type certifications. We outreach to our current and past DBE and other small business firms regarding the benefits of registering on our Planet Bids website, because that gives them automatic notifications of upcoming procurements. We try and increase the number of procurements going on to Planet Bids. Instead of just formal large procurements, we're trying to put more and more smaller procurements on our Planet Bids website so that we can get better outreach to the DBE and small business community. We have hundreds currently registered on our Planet Bids website. For smaller procurements that only require three quotes, we try and seek at least one of those quotes from a DBE or other small business. And we try and attend and promote various small business conferences and fairs throughout the county so that we can better explain to firms about what MTS procures, what our DBE program is, to get their contact information, to put them on our internal bidders list so that we can use them when we're seeking out quotes in future procurements. So we report to the FTA semi-annually our achievement toward their DBE goal. And for this reporting period, we achieved our DBE goal, and this was largely due to awarding a multi-year large option year contract to NMS Management, a DBE, for anti-graffiti film services. And our semi-annual reporting period, it tends to fluctuate. That might be based on awarding contracts with varying performance periods, varying dollar amounts. But our goal is to reach our overall goal within the complete triennial period. And we just completed our triennial period, and we did meet and exceed our goal. Again, this was largely due in the preventative maintenance area, awarding two large contracts to NMS Management, a DBE firm, for janitorial and anti-graffiti film services. We are now beginning a new triennial period, and we completed our DBE goal methodology, and we found that we, based on our analysis, have a 2.9% DBE goal moving forward in the next 3 years. This is based on analysis of how many available DBE firms there are compared to all the available firms to perform on our upcoming federally funded procurements. This number is relatively low, and it's based largely on the type of procurements that we're going to go out for, just having low or no DBEs available to perform that work. That includes in areas such as LRV vehicle body repair, portable toilet services, armored car services, complementary paratransit services, trash disposal. These are just areas that don't have many DBEs, and so that reduces our base figure. But despite this low goal, our procurement staff and myself are always thinking about DBE participation, small business participation on every procurement, and always looking on ways to achieve, not only in meet, but achieve greater success in our program. And although we cannot report to the FTA the participation of minority-owned businesses, women-owned firms, and so forth, we do track it to see the success of fostering small business in our program. And we encourage and do conduct outreach again to all on all contracts, regardless of funding. And when we look at all contracts awarded for the last reporting period, we were able to award about 10% of our contracts to DBEs and other small business firms. So that concludes my presentation, but I just wanted to also note that we're always looking at ways to improve our program, especially in our outreach measures. So if any of your agencies are having great successes in a certain measure, we'd love to hear about it and see about implementing it in our program as well.
Thank you. And we do not have any public comments for this item. I'm going to start with board members. Are there any board members that have any comments? Councilmember Montgomery.
Thank you for this report. I have a couple questions just about how you determine that availability. Is it just off of registered DBE businesses that are known to MTS? How is the availability factor determined?
So we did a methodology document and hired a consultant to help us with that. But what it is you decide what type of procurement you're going to procure, and you develop a NICS code, the type of contracting industry needs that that's going to be. And on that NICS code, they find all certified DBEs on a database through Caltrans or the CUCP, and they divide that by all firms that perform that NICS code, and they use, I believe, a census data from information database from 2016, and they find that number, and they divide times that by the weight of how many dollars are going to be used in that type of industry, and it's a weighted ratio, and you come out to a base figure, which for us was 2.9%.
And does that include just the regional companies, or is that statewide? That's statewide,
based on
the NICS code. Okay.
Oh, sorry. It's in our geographic market area, so that would be San Diego County.
Okay, so it is San Diego County, so these numbers. Now, the company that received the major contract this past year. Is that a that's a local company?
I believe it's
in
a local
our county?
Company, and they are. It's the majority owner, I believe, is a Hispanic American male, and they've been working with MTS for many, many years, and we had to have a successful relationship with that firm.
Okay. Well, just an aside, I think the way that we increase numbers is also to increase pipelines in these different areas. This is specialized, I know, with transit, but the more we can get folks in on the lower levels of construction as they build and grow, they'll be able to have companies that we can include. And then our percentages and our goals potentially could go higher. So hopefully we'll be able to do that in the future. And also just would like to see maybe a list of the outreach events that you attend and other ways that you outreach. If you have a plan, I would love to see that at some point.
Yeah, we do, and I can provide that information. And I can also add that onto future reports about what outreach measures we have or fairs we went to in that last 6-month period and future agendas.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, and I don't see any board members on the lights, and this is just an informational as well, so thank you so much for the work, and Amber Alert, I think it's floods, probably. We are going to move to item 47, the operations budget status report.
Morning. So with me is Gordon Meyer. He's our operating budget supervisor. We're giving you the year-to-date results through December for the operating budget. If I can get this thing working. Starting as always with our operating revenue, passenger revenue was unfavorable slightly for the first 6 months of the year. It's $240,000, 0.5%. We are very favorable year over year. We did build in some growth this year with the transit optimization service enhancements over the last year. So we're slightly behind plan, but we are seeing revenue growth year over year, which has been a big thing for MTS. We've been declining revenues over the last few years, so it's positive to be good year over year. So we'll keep an eye on that for the rest of the year. Other operating revenues is things like advertising and random other stuff. The large number here is energy credits from the state. We used biogas in our buses. We sell those credits to our supplier, and the price of those credits is at all-time highs. It has been all year, still there today, so we're extremely favorable on that line. It's $1.2 million favorable for the first half of the year. So in general, we're driving an overall operating revenue variance of about $1 million for the first half of the year, 1.8%. On the expense side, we are basically at budget for the first 6 months of the year. I mean, there's misses and positives and negatives all over, but in total, we're $16,000 favorable. We are favorable in personnel due to health and welfare costs and workers' compensation costs. The experience in workers' comp for the first half of the year has been very favorable. Energy, we talked about it a couple months ago. We had very high prices in the beginning of the year for electricity, so that's a large unfavorable variance that's been there all year long. We are still seeing high prices over the last couple months as well. Hopefully that comes more in line with our initial forecast the rest of the year. Other things of note, we are very favorable experience so far in risk management as well. The claims costs and recoveries costs are both favorable for the first half of the year. And then we're on the offsetting that partially, we're over budget on materials and supplies for the first half of the year. Just the revenue vehicle parts we've been using on the bus and rail side is higher than we expected the experience there. But again, in total, basically at budget. So for the first 6 months of the year, we are $1 million favorable. It's 1.1% overall. We always have our dashboard of the major concerns. No major concerns here. We talked about electricity. It's a big number. Hopefully the rest of the year it's more favorable than we have so far. Everything else is fairly positive. Sales tax receipts are projected on target in this forecast. We will probably be increasing that projection and be more favorable the next time we put these numbers together. We also did not plan for any Senate Bill 1 funds in this budget because of the recall effort in November. But since that failed, we do have we receive about $12.8 million of SB1 funds that we'll talk to the Budget Development Committee in a couple weeks about how to spend that. And then passenger levels is always a major concern. Keep an eye on that number, how we can do, and we hope to hit our budget number for this year and see positive revenue for there as well. So that concludes our presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We do not have any public comments on this item either. Are there any board members with questions or comments? I don't see any. Thank you so much for the report. So we're going to move on to the report from the ad hoc ballot measure. There's no report at the moment. There's actually a poll that is being taken just to gather input on what the support is from the voters to see if we will move forward or not. And so that's something that will come to the ad hoc committee, I believe, early March. We're going to be seeing the results of all of that, and we'll be sharing it to the full board. There are a couple of public speakers in this item. I'm going to call Dr. B. Okay. So as well as Tom. Yeah. Mr. McConnelly.
So I'm glad I sat through today's meeting. It's very interesting, and I want to applaud some of the really commendable actions, some cost-saving actions, some access actions, particularly to those who are disabled. I just want to bring some awareness on the measure. As some of you all may know, who follow the Convention Center measure, I'm very interested in making sure these measures are really addressing some of the folks, as a homeless advocate, that I'm always trying to look out for and bring better solutions for. As an independent person who is able to access resources, I'd like to be able to support a measure, and I'd like it to be really focused on bringing better access to those folks in deep poverty, those folks in homelessness, and to make sure that any measure that moves forward is really addressing some of these concerns that you've heard this morning also. And I'll be watching. I just want to talk about that. This is a measure that I'll be watching very closely and that I will be weighing in on very, very heavily, just like I did on the Convention Center, if it does not address some of these serious issues that we have in the community. So look forward to hearing more about it, and thanks for a very interesting meeting.
Thank you. We are always welcome to participate. Welcome the public. There's no chair report. Do we have a chief executive officer? There's no report. Are there any board members that would like to share anything? Vice Chair Rios?
Thank you. Just very quickly, I attended a tour of the Midcoast Trolley, and I really encourage all board members, when you have an opportunity, to do so. It was really informative, but to see that magnitude of that project, but also to see the logistics that were involved in making sure that our communities were impacted as little as possible. I also want to thank Sharon Humphreys from Sandeg, who's the principal engineer, James Starling, and Greg Gastelum, and they were, again, very informative in answering all the questions that I had. So again, I encourage everyone to sign up and take that tour. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that. We do have one additional public comment. Mr. Thomas Brill? Thomas Brill? No? I do not see Mr. Brill. So we're going to move on to closed session and then just reconvene to report out. And our next board member will, our next board, MTS board meeting will be March 21st. So with that, moving on to closed session.
Reporting out of closed session, item number 24A, existing litigation. The board received a report from counsel and gave instructions. On item number 24B, conference with real property negotiators, the board received a report and gave instructions to negotiators. Item number 24C, potential litigation, one claim, The board received a report and gave instructions to staff, and in item number 24D, existing litigation, the board received a report and gave instructions to counsel.
That's fine. I'm just, and I'll, and if I can, I'll be here next. I mean, I was here before your meeting started, so I'll be here a half an hour early next time. But my issue is MTS and the Fifth Avenue trolley station. There's 30 residents there, to the tune of 100 people. And MTS puts no security there after 11 o'clock at night. San Diego PD has listed that as a one of the worst transit stops in the whole system. And we continue, like last night, there were people, I mean, it's every night after 11 o'clock. And, you know, as residents, we're getting very frustrated. But yet we go to, like, Old Town, and you have one person sitting there. And like lots of people spoke, you have many times, I mean, I take public transit all over the world and San Diego. I live downtown. And there's groups of 10, 12, 15 MTS security guys. Why doesn't MTS take one or two of the people and put them at these trouble stops after 11 o'clock? So that you don't have those issues. And MTS could be a good neighbor to the people that live in those buildings.